10. Home. I made him have candles lighted, and saw the room looking cheery and inhabited before I left him. I told him that he must regard his illness strictly as one dependent on physical, though subtle, physical causes. I told him that he had evidence of God's care and love in the deliverance which he had just described, and that I had perceived with pain that he seemed to regard its peculiar features as indicating that he had been delivered over to spiritual reprobation. Then such a conclusion nothing could be, I insisted, less warranted, and not only so, but more contrary to facts, as disclosed in his mysterious deliverance from that murderous influence during his Shropshire excursion. First, his niece had been retained by his side without his intending to keep her near him, and secondly, there had been infused into his mind an irresistible repugnance to execute the dreadful suggestion in her presence. As I reasoned this point with him, Mr. Jennings wept. He seemed comforted. One promise I exacted, which was that should the monkey at any time return, I should be sent for immediately, and repeating my assurance that I would give neither time nor thought to any other subject until I had thoroughly investigated his case, and that tomorrow he should hear the result, I took my leave. Before getting into the carriage, I told the servant that his master was far from well, and that he should make a point of frequently looking into his room. My own arrangements I made with a view to being quite secure from interruption. I merely called at my lodgings, and with a travelling desk and carpet-bag, set off in a hackney carriage for an inn about 2 miles out of town, called the Horns, a very quiet and comfortable house, with good thick walls. And there I resolved, without the possibility of intrusion or distraction, to devote some hours of the night in my comfortable sitting-room to Mr. Jennings's case, and so much of the morning as it might require. There occurs here a careful note of Dr. Hesselius's opinion upon the case, and of the habits, diet, and medicines which he prescribed. It is curious, some persons would say mystical, but on the whole I doubt whether it would sufficiently interest a reader of the kind I am likely to meet with to warrant its being here reprinted. The whole letter was plainly written at the inn where he had hid himself for the occasion. The letter is dated from his town lodgings. I left town for the inn, where I slept last night at 9:30, and did not arrive at my room in town until 1 o'clock this afternoon. I found a letter in Mr. Jennings' hand upon my table. It had not come by post, and on inquiry I learnt that Mr. Jennings' servant had brought it, and on learning that I was not to return until today, and that no one could tell him my address, he seemed very uncomfortable, and said that his orders from his master were that he was not to return without an answer. I opened the letter and read. "Dear Dr. Hesselius, it is here. You had not been an hour gone when it returned. It is speaking. It knows all that has happened. It knows everything. It knows you, and is frantic and atrocious. It reviles. I send you this. It knows every word I have written. I write. This I promised, and I therefore write, but I fear very confusedly, very incoherently. I am so interrupted, disturbed. Ever yours, sincerely yours, Robert Linda Jennings." "When did this come?" I asked.
"About 11 last night. The man was here again, and has been here 3 times today. The last time was about an hour since."
Thus answered, and with the notes I had made upon his case in my pocket, I was in a few minutes driving towards Richmond to see Mr. Jennings. I by no means, as you perceive, despaired of Mr. Jennings' case. He had himself remembered and applied, though quite in a mistaken way, the principle which I lay down in my metaphysical medicine, and which governs all such cases. I was about to apply it in earnest. I was profoundly interested and very anxious to see and examine him while the enemy was actually present. I drove up to the sombre house, and ran up the steps and knocked. The door in a little time was opened by a tall woman in black silk. She looked ill, as if she had been crying. She curtsied and heard my question, but she did not answer. She turned her face away, extending her hand towards 2 men who were coming downstairs, and thus having, as it were, tacitly made me over to them, she passed through a side door hastily and shut it. The man who was nearest the hall I at once accosted, but being now close to him I was shocked to see that both his hands were covered with blood. I drew back a little, and the man, passing downstairs, merely said in a low tone, "Here's the servant, sir." The servant had stopped on the stairs, confounded and dumb at seeing me. He was rubbing his hands in a handkerchief, and it was steeped in blood. "Jones, what is it? What has happened?" I asked, while a sickening suspicion overpowered me. The man asked me to come up to the lobby. I was beside him in a moment, and frowning and pallid, with contracted eyes, he told me the horror, which I already half guessed. His master had made away with himself. I went upstairs with him to the room. What I saw there, I won't tell you. He had cut his throat with his razor. It was a frightful gash. The two men had laid him on the bed and composed his limbs. It had happened, as the immense pool of blood on the floor declared, at some distance between the bed and the window. There was carpet round his bed, and a carpet under his dressing-table, but none on the rest of the room, for the man said he did not like a carpet in his bedroom. In this sombre and now terrible room, one of the great elms that darkened the house was slowly moving the shadow of one of its great boughs upon this dreadful floor. I beckoned to the servant, and we went downstairs together. I turned off the hall into an old-fashioned panelled room, and standing there I heard all the servant had to tell. It was not a great deal. "I concluded, sir, from your words and looks, sir, as you left last night, that you thought my master seriously ill. I thought it might be that you were afraid of a fit or something, so I attended very close to your directions. He sat up late till past 3 o'clock. He was not writing or reading. He was talking a great deal to himself, but that was nothing unusual. About half the hour, I assisted him to undress, and left him in his slippers and dressing-gown. I went back softly in about half an hour. He was in his bed, quite undressed, and a pair of candles lighted on the table beside his bed. He was leaning on his elbow, and looking out at the other side of the bed when I came in. I asked him if he wanted anything, and he said no. I don't know whether it was what you said to me, sir, or something a little unusual about him, but I was uneasy, uncommon uneasy about him last night. In another half-hour, or it might have been a little more, I went up again. I did not hear him talking as before. I opened the door a little. The candles were both out, which was not usual. I had a bedroom candle, and I let the light in a little bit, looking softly round. I saw him sitting in that chair beside the dressing-table, with his clothes on again. He turned round and looked at me. I thought it was strange he should get up and dress, and put out the candles to sit in the dark that way. But I only asked him again if I could do anything for him. He said, no. Rather sharp, I thought. I asked if I might light the candles, and he said, do as you like, Jones. So I lighted them, and I lingered about the room, and he said, tell me the truth, Jones. Why did you come again? Did you not hear anyone cursing? No, sir, I said, wondering what he could mean. No, said he after me, of course no. And I said to him, wouldn't it be well, sir, if you went to bed? It's just 5 o'clock. And he said nothing but, very likely, good night, Jones. So I went, sir, but in less than an hour I came again. The door was fast, and he heard me, and called, as I thought, from the bed, to know what I wanted, and he desired me not to disturb him again. I lay down and slept for a little. It must have been between 6 and 7 when I went up again. The door was still fast, and he made no answer, so I did not like to disturb him, and thinking he was asleep, I left him till 9. It was his custom to ring when he wished me to come, and I had no particular hour for calling him. I tapped very gently, and getting no answer, I stayed away a good while, supposing he was getting some rest then. It was not till 11 o'clock I grew really uncomfortable about him, for at the latest he was never, that I could remember, later than 10:30. I got no answer. I knocked and called, but still no answer. So not being able to force the door, I called Thomas from the stables, and together we forced it, and found him in the shocking way you saw. Jones had no more to tell. Poor Mr. Jennings was very gentle, and very kind. All his people were fond of him. I could see that the servant was very much moved. So, dejected and agitated, I passed from that terrible house, and its dark canopy of elms, and I hope I shall never see it more. While I write to you, I feel like a man who has but half waked from a frightful and monotonous dream. My memory rejects the picture with incredulity and horror. Yet I know it is true. It is the story of the process of a poison. A poison which excites the reciprocal action of spirit and nerve and paralyzes the tissue that separates these cognate functions of the senses, the external and the interior. Thus we find strange bedfellows, and the mortal and immortal prematurely make acquaintance.